You don't have a handsome husband to keep you warm and happy in your cold, lonely bed. Really, Mercy, responded my aunt, looking straight into those photograph eyes. How could I possibly be bored when I live with such fascinating people as my sister and her stockbroker husband, who both adore fighting in their bedroom so much one of them screams? Truthfully, I feel rather safe in my lonely bed without a handsome brute of a man who likes to wield his belt for a whip. Elspeth, how dare you tell my best friend such nonsense? Damien and I play games, that's all. It adds to his excitement and to mine. Mama smiled apologetically at the photograph. Unfortunately, Elspeth knows nothing at all about the many ways of pleasing a man or giving him what he likes. My aunt snorted contemptuously. Mercy, I'm sure you never allowed Horace to play those kind of sick sex games with you. If she had, she wouldn't be where she is now, giggled my mama. Vera's eyes were as wide as mine. We both sat silent and motionless. I was sure both of them had forgotten we were there. Really, Mercy Marie, you do have to forgive my sister who is a bit drunk. As I was saying a moment ago, I do live with such fascinating people there is never a dull moment. One daughter dies in the woods, another comes to take her place, and the fools give her the same name. Elspeth, snapped my mama, bolting upright from her slouched position. If you hate your sister and her husband so much, why don't you leave and take your daughter with you? Surely there must be some school somewhere that needs a teacher. You do have the kind of sharp tongue that could really keep children in their place. No, my aunt said calmly, still sipping her tea. I'll never leave this cluttery museum of junk. It's just as much mine as it is hers. She held her small finger in a crooked way I admired. Never could I manage to make mine stay like that for so long. Odd how my aunt had such prissy manners and wore such unprissy clothes. My mother had very prissy clothes and very unprissy mannerisms. While my aunt held her knees close together, my mother parted hers. While my aunt sat as straight as if she had a poker down her spine, my mother made herself into a rag and assumed sensual poses. They did everything to antagonize one another, and they succeeded. During tea time, I never contributed anything unless it was demanded of me, and Vera usually stayed just as quiet, hoping to hear more secrets. Vera had crawled around in back of a sofa, and there she sat, with her lame leg stretched straight out, her other pulled up to her chin as she slowly leafed through that illustrated medical book that showed human anatomy. Just beneath the front cover was her cardboard man of many thick paper layers. In the first one, he was just naked. When that cut-out man was turned over, he was shown with all his arteries painted red, his veins blue. Beneath that colorful plate was another man with all his vital organs showing. The last plate showed the skeleton, which didn't interest Vera at all. There was also a naked woman who could be viewed inside out, too, but she never held much interest for Vera. Long ago, she had pulled the fetus from the womb, and in her schoolbooks she used that tabbed baby for a bookmark. Bit by bit, Vera began taking the naked man apart, untabbing his numbered paper parts and studying them closely. Each organ could be fitted back into proper position when the tabs were stuck through the right numbered slots. In her left hand, she clutched his male parts, even as she plucked out his heart and his liver, turning them over and over, before she again took that cardboard thing from her left hand and examined it in great detail. How strangely men were made, I thought, as she put the man back together and he came out right. Then she started again to take him apart. I turned my eyes away. By this time, both my mother and Aunt Elspeth were more than a bit drunk.
Is anything as wonderful as you thought it would be?
Wistfully, Mama met my aunt's softened gaze.
I still love Damien, even if he hasn't lived up to his promises. Maybe I was only fooling myself anyway, thinking I was really good enough to be a concert pianist. Maybe I married to keep from finding out just how mediocre I really am.
Lucietta, I don't believe that,
said my aunt with surprising compassion.
You are a very gifted pianist, and you know it as well as I do. You just let that man of yours put doubts in your head. How many times has Damien soothed you by saying you wouldn't have succeeded if you had gone on?
Lots and lots and lots of times, chanted my mother in a silly, drunken way that made me want to cry.
Don't talk to me about it anymore, Ellie. It makes me feel too sorry for myself. Mr. Johansson would be so disappointed in me. I hope he's dead and never found out I amounted to nothing.
Did you love him, Lucietta? My aunt asked in a kindly way. I perked up. Vera looked up from her play with the gross, naked man whose heart she was squeezing in her hand. Mr. Ingvar Johansson had been my mother's music teacher when she was a young girl.
When I was 15 and full of romantic notions, I thought I loved him.
Mama sighed heavily and rubbed at a tear that trickled down her cheek. She turned her head so that I saw her beautiful profile, and she stared toward the windows where the winter sun could only dimly filter in to pattern our oriental with faded patches of light.
He was the first man to give me a real kiss.
Boys in school had, but his was the first real kiss. Weren't all kisses alike?
Did you like his kisses?
Yes, Ellie, I liked them well enough. They filled me with longing. Ingmar woke me up sexually and then left me unfulfilled. Many a night I lay awake then, and even now I wake up and wish I'd let him go ahead and finish what he'd started, instead of saying no and saving myself for Damien.
No, Lucietta, you did the right thing. Damien would never have married you if he'd even suspected you weren't a virgin. He claims to be a modern man with liberal ideas, but he's a Victorian at heart. You know damn well he couldn't handle what happened to Adrina any better than she could.
What did she mean? How could the first Adrina have handled anything when they found her dead in the woods? Suddenly Mama turned to see me half-hidden behind the fern. She stared, as if she had to readjust some thoughts in her head before she spoke.
Adrina, why do you try to hide? Come out and sit in a chair like a lady. Why are you so quiet? Contribute something once in a while. No one enjoys a person who doesn't know how to make small talk.
What was it the first Adrina couldn't handle any better than Papa? I asked, getting to my feet and falling unladylike into a chair.
Adrina, be careful with that cup of tea.
Mama, exactly what happened to my dead sister? What killed her? A snake?
That's not small talk, snapped Mama irritably. Really, Adrina, we've told you all you need to know about your sister's accident in the woods. And remember, she would still be alive if she'd learned to obey the orders we gave her. I hope you will always keep that in mind when next you feel stubborn or rebellious and think being disobedient is a good way to get back at your parents, who try to do the best they can.
Was the first Adrina hard to handle? I asked, with some hope of hearing she was less than perfect.
Enough is enough,
Mama said more gently.
Just remember, the woods are off limits.
But Vera goes into the woods. Vera had risen and was standing behind the sofa, smiling at my mother in a knowing way that told me she knew the cause of my older sister's death. Oh, now, suddenly I wish she hadn't overheard Mama's warning, for that gave Vera another weapon to use against me. From the way the party died after that, it seemed I was never going to be a social success. Aunt Elsbeth put the photograph away. Vera hobbled up to her room, carrying one part of that naked man with her, and I sat alone in the Roman Revival room, realizing I couldn't ask direct questions and expect an answer. I had to learn how to be sneaky like everyone else, or I would never know anything, not even the time of day. Valentine's Day came that very week, and Vera limped home from school with a paper sack full of valentines from all her boyfriends. She came into my bedroom with a huge red satin heart that opened to reveal a delicious array of chocolates.
"From the boy who loves me most,"
she said to me arrogantly, snatching the box away without offering me even one piece.
He's going to take me away from here one day and marry me, too. It's in his eyes. His marvelous amber eyes. Soon he's going to move. Well, Never mind where he's going to move, but he loves me. I know he loves me.
How old did you say he was?
What difference does that make? She sat on my bed and dipped into the candy box again, eyeing me in a funny way. I can be 10, 12, 14, 16, any age, for I have caught the magic of the first Adrina, the best and most perfect, most beautiful Adrina. Mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the fairest Adrina of all? And the mirror says, you are. Vera, you are.
You sound crazy, I said, backing away from her. And you can't catch a gift that's meant only for girls with my name. Papa told me that.
Oh, Papa would tell you anything, and you'd be stupid enough to believe. I'm never going to be that dumb. My mother was stupid enough to let some sweet-talking guy talk her into his bed, but that's not going to happen to me. When the seducing is done, it will be me who does it, and I know how. That medical book is teaching me all I need to know. Those stupid sex courses they teach in school don't give enough facts.
Soon all the chocolates were gone, and when they were, Vera gave me the empty red satin heart. For some reason, that red heart touched me. How nice of that boy to give Vera candy. I hadn't known Vera could inspire love in anyone, not when she couldn't inspire it even in her own mother.
Lions and Lambs. One day I heard the special delivery man say to Mama,
"Isn't this a lovely spring day?"
Or else I might not have known it was spring from the cold way it was. The trees hadn't budded out yet, and birds weren't singing. I rejoiced to know the season, if not the month, but I was too ashamed to try and ask what month it was and have people look at me with pity. It wasn't special to not know anything about the passing of time. It was crazy. Maybe that was why they were ashamed to tell me why the first Adrina had died. Maybe she'd been crazy, too. Daring his scorn, I ran after the delivery man and asked my silly question.
"Why, it's the month of March, girl. Come in like a lion, and soon it will go out like a lamb."
It was cold, the wind was wild, and that I could easily associate with a lion. The next day I woke up and the sun was out. Squirrels and rabbits were gambling on our lawn, and all was right with the world, according to Papa and according to Mama. Dinner ended the next night with Papa bellowing at Vera,
"Get out of the kitchen. I've been hearing tales about your getting caught cutting out dirty pictures in the drugstore. Any girl who's stealing like that has already proved there's fire beneath the smoke."
"I didn't do anything, Papa,"
Vera sobbed. Later, in my room, she hurled at me,
"God cursed me with fragile bones, and you with a fragile brain. But between the two, I got the best deal."
But then she was crying.
"Papa doesn't love me like he loves you. I hate you, Adrina. Really hate you."
I was baffled. I was Papa's child. Naturally, he loved me best. I tried to tell her this.
"Oh, you!"
she screamed.
"What do you know about anything? You're spoiled and pampered and babied like you're too good for the world. But in the end, it will be me who comes out on top. You just wait and see."
Decided on a course of action, I went to Papa, who seemed terribly excited about something. He paced the floor of the Roman Revival salon, glancing from time to time at his wristwatch, but he wouldn't let me look when I tried to.
"What do you want, Adrina?"
he asked impatiently. "I want to talk about Vera, Papa."
"I don't want to talk about Vera, Adrina."
I drew back. "Even if she's not your daughter, you shouldn't be so mean to her."
"What's she been telling you?"
he asked suspiciously.
"Has she been trying to explain why you have that dream?"
My eyes widened. I'd never told Vera about my worst nightmare. He was the only one who knew about my troubled dreams. I was sure he didn't want Mama to worry about them too, and that dream was my curse and my shame. Never would I tell Vera. My head moved from side to side as I kept backing away.
"Why are you acting afraid of your own father? Has that girl been filling your head with foul tales?"
"No, Papa."
"Don't lie to me, girl. I can tell when you lie. Your eyes betray you."
The mean, uncaring mood he was in made me turn and run.
I bumped into things like armed coat racks and umbrella stands and finally fell into a corner where I stayed just to catch my breath. That's when I heard my aunt coming down the hall with my father at her side.
I don't care what you say, Ellie. I am doing the best I can to cure her. I am also doing the best I can for Vera, and that's not easy. God, why didn't you give birth to a child like my Adrina?
That is exactly what this house needs, answered my aunt coldly.
Another Adrina. You listen to me, Ellie, and listen well. You keep Vera away from my daughter. You keep reminding Vera each day of her life to keep her mouth shut, or I'll have the skin from her back and the hair ripped from her scalp. If I ever find out Vera was somehow connected...
She wasn't. Of course she wasn't.
Their voices faded away. I was left in the shadows feeling sick and trying to figure out what all that meant. Vera had the secret of why I couldn't remember like everyone else. I had to get Vera to tell me. But Vera hated me. She'd never tell me anything. Somehow I had to make Vera stop hating me. Somehow I had to make her like me. Then maybe she'd tell me the secret of myself. The next morning at breakfast, Mama was smiling and cheerful.
Guess what? She said as I sat down to breakfast. We're going to have neighbors. Your father rented that small cottage where Mr. Willis used to live before he died.
That name rang a familiar bell. Had I known Mr. Willis?
They're moving in today, Mama went on. If we weren't expecting your Aunt Mercy Marie, we could stroll through the woods and welcome them. June is such a lovely month.
I stared at her, open-mouthed. Mama, the delivery man said yesterday it was March.
No, darling, it's June. The last delivery man to come here came months ago.
She sighed.
I wish I had the department store deliver every day. Then I'd have something to look forward to besides Damien's return home.
All the joy I should have felt at the prospect of neighbors was spoiled by my disjointed memory. Vera limped into the kitchen then, throwing me a mean look before she fell into a chair and asked for bacon, eggs, pancakes, and donuts.
Did I hear you say we're going to have neighbors, Mama?
Mama? Why was she calling my mother that? I shot my own mean glare her way. I tried not to let Mama see. She looked tired, rather distraught, as she began to make goose liver pate for the party. Why did she go to so much trouble when that woman was dead and only Aunt Elspeth would be there to eat the best of everything?
I know who the new neighbors are, smirked Vera. The boy who gave me a box of candy for Valentine's Day hinted he might be moving near us. He's 11 years old, but he's so big he looks like 13 or 14.
My aunt stalked in, her long face grim and formidable.
He's too young for you, then, she snapped,
making me wonder if Vera really was much older than I'd thought. Gosh, why couldn't I know anyone's age? They knew mine.
Don't you start fooling around with him, Vera, or Damien will kick us both out.
I'm not afraid of Papa, said Vera smugly. I know how to handle men. A kiss, a hug, a big smile, and they melt.
You are a manipulator, I know that. But leave that boy alone. Are you listening, Vera?
Yes, Mother, answered Vera in her most scornful voice.
Of course I am listening. Even the dead could listen. And I don't really want a boy who's only 11. I hate living way out here in the sticks where there aren't any boys but the stupid ones in the village.
Papa came in next, wearing a new custom-fitted suit. He sat to tuck a napkin under his chin so nothing would spot his pure silk tie. If cleanliness was next to godliness, Papa was a god walking the earth. Is it really June, Papa? I asked.
Why do you ask?
It seems only yesterday it was March. That man who brought Mama's new dress said it was March.
That was months ago, darling. Months ago. Of course it's June. Look at the flowers in bloom, the green grass. Feel how hot it is. You don't get days like this in March.
Vera ate half her pancakes and then was up and heading for the foyer to pick up her school books. She'd failed her grade and had to spend 8 weeks of her vacation going to summer school.
Why are you following me?
She bit out. I held fast to my determination to make Vera like me. Why do you hate me, Vera?
I don't have time to list the reasons. Her voice was haughty. Everyone in school thinks you're strange. They know you're crazy. That surprised me. How can they when they don't know me? Turning, she smiled. I tell them all about you and your quirky ways, staying close to the shadows near the wall and how you scream out each night. They know that you're so special, you don't even know which year, month, or day of the week it is. How disloyal to spread family secrets. Again wounded, my desire to have her like me weakened. I didn't really think she ever would. I wish you wouldn't talk about me to people who might not understand. Understand what? That you're a nutty freak with no memory? Really, they understand you perfectly, and nobody, absolutely nobody, would ever want to be your friend. Something hard and heavy grew in my chest, making it ache. I sighed and turned away. I just wanted to know what everybody else knows. That, my dear little sister, is totally impossible for someone with no brain. I whirled about and shouted, "I'm not your sister. I'd rather be dead than be your sister." Long after she disappeared down the dirt road, I stood on the porch, thinking maybe I was crazy. Again at 3, Aunt Mercy Marie came to sit on our piano. As always, my aunt and my mother took turns talking for her. The bourbon was poured into the steaming hot tea, and I was given my cup of cola with 2 cubes of ice. Mama told me to pretend it was hot tea. I sat uncomfortably in my very best white dress. Because Papa wasn't there, I was soon forgotten as those two women lit into each other, letting loose all the frustrations they had held in check all week.
"Elsbeth," shrieked Mama after some insult about the house she loved, "the trouble with you is you're so damned jealous our father loved me better. You sit there and say ugly things about this house because you wish to God it belonged to you, just as you cry your heart out each night, sleeping alone in your bed, or lying there restless and awake, jealous again because I always got what you wanted, when you could have had what I have if you'd kept your damn big mouth shut." "And you certainly know how to open your big mouth, Lucietta," barked my aunt. "All your life wandering through this mausoleum and gushing about its beauty. Of course our father left this house to you and not to me. You made me want to vomit, you were so sweet. You set out to rob me of everything I wanted. Even when my boyfriends came to call on me, you were there, smiling and flirting. You even flirted with our father, flattering him so much you made me seem cold and indifferent. But I did all the work around here, and I still do. You prepare the meals, and you think that's enough. Well, it's not enough. I do everything else. I'm sick and tired of being everybody's slave. And as if that's not enough, you're teaching your daughter your tricks."
Highly indignant, my mother's beautiful face flamed red.
"Just keep it up, Elsbeth, and you won't have a roof over your head. I know what galls you. Don't think I don't. You wish to God you had everything I do. You're a fool, and you married a fool. Damien Adair only wanted what wealth he thought you'd inherit. But you never told him until it was too late for him to back out that our dear father hadn't paid his taxes or had one lick of repair work done on this house. You claim to love gaslight, but the truth of it is, you know electric lights would show Damien just how shabby this house really is. The kitchen and this room dominate our lives. The kitchen is so bright, when he steps in here he can hardly see. None of us can. In your place, I would have been honest. And if you call honesty a fault, then by God, you are flawless."
"Elsbeth," screamed a high voice from the piano, "stop being nasty to your beloved sister."
"Go cook yourself," yelled Aunt Elsbeth.
"Mercy Marie," said my mother in her most arrogant, haughty voice, "I think you'd better leave now, since my sister cannot be kind to a guest, or kind to my daughter, or kind to this house, or kind to anyone, not even to her own flesh and blood. I think there's no reason to go on having these tea times. I say goodbye with reluctance, for I loved you, and hate to think of you as dead. I can't bear to see people I love die. This has been my pitiful attempt to keep you alive. She didn't look at my aunt as she said, Elsbeth, kindly leave this room before you say something to make me hate you more. Mama appeared on the verge of tears as her voice broke. Had she forgotten this was only a pretend game? Was I just a pretend game for her too, so she could keep the beloved first Adrina alive? Wednesday morning came, and I was happy I'd written myself a note to remind me that Tuesday was yesterday. Now I had a grip on reality. It was Wednesday. I'd write that down tonight. At last, I'd figured out a way to keep track of the days. As I was passing by my parents' room on the way to the kitchen, my mother called me inside. She was brushing her long hair with an antique silver hairbrush. Papa was leaning close to the dresser mirror, making a knot in his tie. Ever so carefully, he made the turns, the twists, the pull-throughs.
"You tell her, Lucky,"
said Papa in a soft voice. He looked happy enough to burst. Mama turned to smile at me, too. Eagerly, I ran to be embraced and held against the soft swell of her breasts.
"Sweetheart, you're always complaining about having no one to play with but Vera, but someone new is coming to take away your loneliness. Come November or early December, you are going to have what you've wanted for so long."
School! They were going to send me to school! At last! At long last!
Darling, haven't you told us many times you'd love a brother or sister? Well, you are going to have one or the other.
I didn't know what to say. Visions of happy school days vanished. Will-o'-the-wisp dreams never came true for me. Never. Then, as I stood trembling in the circle of her arms and Papa came to softly stroke my hair, I felt a surge of unexpected happiness. A baby, a little brother or sister would surely set me free from all their demanding attention. Then maybe they'd want me out of the house and in school, learning how to do many things I didn't know about now. There was hope. There had to be hope. Mama gave Papa a long, distressed look, full of unspoken meaning.
Damien, surely this time we'll have a boy, won't we?
Why did she put it like that? Didn't she like girls?
Keep calm, Lucky. The odds are with us. This time, we'll have a boy.
Papa smiled at me lovingly, as if he could read my thoughts in my wide eyes.
We already have one beautiful and special daughter, so God does owe us a son.
Yes, God did owe him a son after taking the first and best Adrina and replacing her with only me. On my knees that night beside my bed, I put my palms together under my chin, closed my eyes, and prayed. Lord above, even if my parents do want a boy, I really won't mind if you send them a girl. Just don't let her have violet eyes and chameleon hair like mine. Don't make her special. It's so awfully lonesome being special. I wish you'd made me only ordinary and given me a better memory. If the first and best Adrina is up there with you, don't use her to model from, or Vera either. Make this baby wonderful, but not so special it can't even go to school. I started to close out and say amen, but I added a postscript. And Lord God, hurry up and let those neighbors move in. I need a friend, even if that boy does like Vera. I kept a daily journal now to aid my faulty memory. That Thursday, my aunt and my cousin were told the news I'd known for a full day. It made me feel special for my parents to confide something so important to me first.
Yes, Ellie, Lucky is pregnant again. Isn't that wonderful news? Of course, since we already have the daughter we asked for, now we're going to demand a son.
My aunt threw my mother a startled look.
Oh, my God,
she responded dully.
Some people never learn.
Vera's pasty pallor sickened more. Panic seemed to fade her dark eyes as well. Then she caught me staring at her, and she quickly straightened before she stood.
I'm leaving to visit a friend. I won't be home until dark.
She stood there waiting for someone to object, as surely everyone would if I were to say the same words. But no one said anything, almost as if they didn't care whether or not Vera ever came back. Looking surly, Vera limped from the kitchen. I jumped up to follow her out to the front porch. Who are you going to visit?
None of your damned business.
We don't have any close neighbors, and it's a long walk to visit the McKennas.
Never mind,
she said, choking, tears in her eyes.
You just go back inside and hear about the new baby, and I'll visit my friend who could never stand you.
I watched her limp off down the dirt road, wondering where she could go. Maybe she wasn't going anywhere, but only looking for some place to cry alone. Back in the kitchen, Papa was still talking.
They moved some of their things into the cottage last week, but they only started staying there yesterday. I haven't met them myself, but the realtor says they've lived in the village for several years and always paid their rent on time. And just think, Lucky, now you'll have a live woman to invite to your teas, and we can say goodbye to Mercy Marie. Though no doubt you two enjoy imitating her cruel wit very much, I want you to quit that game. It's not healthy for Adrina to witness something so bizarre. Besides, for all you know, Mercy Marie may be the fat wife of some African chief and not dead at all.
Both my mother and aunt scoffed. They wanted to believe no man would want Mercy Marie.
We're finished with tea times,
said Mama dully, as if she'd finished with all social life now that she was expecting a baby. Papa, I began tentatively as I sat at the table again. When did I last see Aunt Mercy Marie alive? Leaning across the table, Papa kissed my cheek. Then he shifted his chair closer to mine so his arm could encircle my shoulders. My aunt got up to sit in the kitchen rocker where she knitted. In a second or so, she was so angry with her knitting that she threw it down, picked up a feather duster, and began to swipe at dusty tabletops in the adjoining room, keeping always close to the door so she could listen.
It was years and years ago when you knew Mercy Marie. Naturally, you don't remember her. Sweetheart, stop troubling your brain with efforts to recall the past. Today is what counts, not yesterday. Memories are only important to the old who have already lived the best of their lives and have nothing to look forward to. You're only a child, and your future stretches long and inviting before you. All the good things are ahead, not behind. You can't remember every detail of your early childhood, but neither can I. The best is yet to be, some poet wrote, and I believe that. Papa's going to make sure you have only the best kind of future. Your gift is growing stronger and stronger. And you know why, don't you?
The rocking chair. That chair was giving me the first and best Adrina's brain and erasing all my memories. Oh, I hated her. Why couldn't she stay dead in her grave? I didn't want her life. I wanted my own. I pulled from Papa's embrace. I'm going out into the yard to play, Papa.
Don't go into the woods,
he warned. Aunt Elspeth seemed drawn back into the kitchen. She swung that duster in such a threatening way it seemed she might whack Papa with it. Mama turned her violet eyes on her sister and said mildly,
Really, Elspeth, you're flinging around more dust than you're picking up.
Once I was outside, Papa's words kept resounding in my head. He didn't really love me. He loved her, the first and the best, the most perfect Adrina. For the rest of my life, I had to live up to the standards she'd set. How could I be everything she'd been when I was me? I had been planning to slip through the woods and see our new neighbors, but my aunt called me back inside and kept me busy all morning helping her clean the house. Mama wasn't feeling well. Something called morning sickness had her running to the powder room often, and my aunt would look pleased when she did that, muttering to herself all the time about fools who risked the wrath of God. Vera came limping home around 3, looking hot, pale, and exhausted. She threw me a scathing glance and stomped up the stairs. I decided I'd check on what she was doing before I stole through the woods to meet the new neighbors. I didn't want Vera to follow me. She'd be sure to tell Papa so I'd be punished. Vera wasn't in her room, nor was she in mine, prowling through my drawers in hopes of finding something to steal. I kept searching, hoping to surprise her. Instead, she surprised me. Inside the first Adrina's room, which Papa usually kept locked except on the days Mama cleaned in there, Vera was seated in the rocking chair with the calla lily back, the magic chair. Back and forth she was rocking, sing-song chanting as Papa made me do so often. For some reason, it made me furious to see her there. No wonder I wasn't catching the gift. Vera was trying to steal it. "Get out of that chair," I yelled. Reluctantly, she came back to herself, opening her large dark eyes that glittered just like Papa's. Her lips curled in a sneer.
"You gonna make me, little girl?"
"Yes." I stormed bravely, striding into the dreaded room and ready to defend my right to sit in that chair. Even though I didn't want the first and best Adrina's gifts, I didn't want Vera to have them either. Before I could do a thing, Vera was out of the chair.
"Now you hear this, Adrina number two. In the long run, it's going to be me who takes the first Adrina's place. You don't have what she had, and you never will. Papa is trying and trying to make you over into what she was, but he's failing, and he's beginning to realize that. That's why he told me to start using the rocking chair, because now he wants me to have the first Adrina's gifts."
I didn't believe her, yet something frail within me cracked and pained. She saw me weaken, saw me tremble.
"Your mother doesn't love you nearly as much as she loved the first Adrina either. She fakes love for you, Adrina. Fakes it. Both your parents would see you dead if they could get back the girl they really loved."
"Stop saying things like that."
"I'll never stop saying what needs to be said."
"Leave me alone. Leave this room alone. You are a fake, Vera. The worst kind of fake." Then, taking a wild swing, I tried to hit her. She chose to stand at that moment, and if she hadn't timed it so well, my fist would have missed her. As it was, it caught her smack on her jaw. She fell back on the rocking chair, which tipped over. Surely that fall didn't do as much damage as her loud howls of pain indicated. Aunt Elsbeth came on the run.
"What have you done to my daughter?"
she yelled, running to help Vera stand. Once she had Vera on her feet, she dashed back to me and slapped my face. Quickly, I dodged her second blow. I heard Vera screaming, "Mother, help me! I can't breathe!"
"Of course you can breathe,"
snapped my aunt impatiently, but a trip to the emergency room proved Vera had 4 broken ribs. The ambulance men gave Mama and my aunt funny looks, as if they suspected Vera couldn't possibly always be hurting herself. Then they looked at me and weakly smiled. I was sent to bed without an evening meal. Papa didn't come home until late because of some business meeting, and Mama retired early, leaving my aunt in charge. All that night I heard Vera moaning, gasping and panting as she tried to sleep. Doubled over like an old crone, she came into my room in the middle of the night and shook her fist in my face.
"Someday I'm going to bring down this house and everyone in it," she hissed in a deadly voice. "And you'll be the first I fell. Remember that if you never remember anything else, second and worst Adrina."
Arden Lowe. In the morning, I was desperate to escape the house. Since Elsbeth was tending to the wounded Vera and Mama was staying in bed with her morning sickness, I had the first opportunity of my lifetime to steal away unobserved. The woods were full of shadows. Just like the first Adrina, I was disobeying, but the sky above said there wasn't a chance of rain, and without the rain, it couldn't happen again. Shimmering sun rays fell through the lacy green canopy of leaves to pattern the path ahead with golden spots of light. Birds were singing, squirrels were chasing each other, rabbits ran, and now that I was free from white fern, I felt good, yet slightly uneasy. Still, if ever I was going to make friends of my own, I had to make the first move and prove something, if to no one but myself. I was going to see the new family living in the gardener's cottage that hadn't been occupied for many years. I'd never seen this part of the woods, but still it seemed familiar. I stopped to stare down at the path, which branched off right and crookedly wandered forward, too. Deep inside, some directing knowledge told me to turn right. Each little noise I heard made me freeze, listen, straining to hear the giggle I heard when I was in that rocking chair, reliving events that had happened to the first and best and were glued to that chair. Little whispers were in the summer leaves. Little butterflies of panic were fluttering in my head. I kept hearing all the warnings. Dangerous in the woods, unsafe in the woods, death in the woods.
Nervously, I quickened my steps. I'd sing like the seven dwarves used to whistle to make them unafraid. Now why did I think that? That was her kind of thought. I told myself as I hurried along that it was time I braved the world by myself. Time indeed. I told myself each foot away from that house of dim corners and brooding whispers was making me feel better, happier. I wasn't weak, spoiled, or unfit for the world. I was just as brave as any girl of... 7? Something about the woods, something about the way the sun shone through the leaves. Colors were trying to speak to me, tell me what I couldn't remember. If I didn't stop thinking as I was, soon I'd be running and screaming, expecting the same thing to happen to me that happened to her. I was the only Adrina left alive in the world. Truly, I didn't have to be afraid. Lightning never struck twice in the same place. On the very edge of a clearing, I came upon the cottage in the woods. It was a small white cottage with a red roof. I ducked to hide behind an old hickory tree when I saw a boy come out of the cottage door carrying a rake and a pail. He was tall and slim, and already I knew who he was. He was the one who'd given Vera the box of candy on Valentine's Day. She had told me he was 11, and in July he'd be 12. The most popular boy in his class, studious, intelligent, quick-witted, and fun, and he had a crush on Vera. That sort of proved he wasn't too brilliant. But from what my aunt was always saying, men were only grown-up little boys, and the male sex knew only what their eyes and glands told them, nothing else. Watching him, I could tell he was a hard worker from the diligent way he set about cleaning up the yard, which was a wilderness of tangleweed, briars, Virginia crabgrass, spidergrass. He wore faded blue jeans that fit skin tight, as if he'd outgrown them or they'd shrunk. His thin old shirt might once have been bright blue, but now it was faded gray-white. From time to time he'd stop to rest, to look around and whistle in imitation of some bird. Then, after a few seconds, he was back to work, pulling up weeds and throwing them in his pail, which he dumped often in a huge trash can. This boy didn't scare me, even though Papa and that rocking chair had taught me to be terrified of what boys might do. Suddenly, he tore off the worn canvas gloves he wore, hurled them down, and spun around, directly facing the tree I was hiding behind.
"Isn't it time you stopped hiding and watching?"
he asked, turning to pick up his pail of weeds to empty it in the larger can.
"Come on out and be friendly. I don't bite."
My tongue stayed glued to the roof of my mouth, though his voice was kind.
"I won't hurt you if that's why you're afraid. I even know your name is Adrina Adele Adair, the girl with the beautiful long hair that changes colors. All the boys in White Fern Village talk about the White Fern girls and say you're the most beautiful one of all. Why don't you go to school like other girls? And why didn't you write me a note and thank me for that box of Valentine candy I sent you months and months ago? That was rude, you know. Very rude not to even call on the phone."
My breath caught. He'd given me the candy and not Vera? "I didn't know you knew me, and no one gave me the candy," I said in a small, hoarse voice. I wasn't sure even now that he'd send a totally unknown girl a box of expensive candy when Vera was pretty enough and already shaping into a woman.
"Sure I know you. That's why I wrote you that note with the candy. I see you all the time with your parents,"
he continued.
"The trouble is, you never turn your head to see anyone. I'm in your sister's class in school. I asked her why you didn't go to school, and she told me you were crazy. But I don't believe that. When people are crazy, it shows in their eyes. I went into the drugstore and looked for the prettiest red satin heart of all. I hope Vera gave you at least one piece, since it was all yours."
Did he know Vera that well, enough to suspect she'd lie and eat it all? "Vera said you gave the box of candy to her."
"Aha,"
he said.
"That is exactly what my mom said when I told her you must be a very ungrateful kind of girl. And even if you didn't eat a piece, I hope you realize I did try to let you know there's one boy who thinks you are the prettiest girl he's ever seen."
"Thank you for the candy," I whispered.
"I deliver the morning and evening newspapers. It's the first time I've spent my hard-earned money on a gift for a girl."
"Why did you do it?" He turned his head quickly, trying to catch a glimpse. Oh. His eyes were amber-colored. The sun was in them, making him almost blind but showing me in detail what a pretty color they were, a lot lighter in shade than his hair.
I guess sometimes, Adrina, you can look at a girl and know right away you like her a lot. And when she never even looks your way, you've got to do something drastic. And then it didn't work.
Not knowing what to say, I said nothing, but I did move a little so he could see my face while my body stayed safely hidden by the bushes.
Darn if I can understand why you don't go to school.
How could I explain when I didn't understand? Unless it was like Aunt Elspeth said, that Papa wanted to keep me all for himself and train me.
Since you haven't asked, I'll introduce myself. I'm Arden Nelson Lowe.
Cautiously, he stepped closer to my hiding place, craning his neck in order to see me better.
I'm an A name, too, if that means anything, and I think it does.
What do you think it means? I asked, feeling perplexed. And don't come any closer. If you do, I'll run.
If you run, I'll only give chase and catch you,
he said. I can run very fast, I warned.
So can I.
If you caught me, what would you do? He laughed and spun around in a circle.
I really don't know, except it would give me the chance to see you really close. And then I could find out if those eyes of yours are truly violet or just dark blue.
Would it matter? I felt worried. My eye color was like my hair color, ambiguous. Strange eyes that would change color with my moods, from violet to dark, dark purple. Haunted eyes, said Aunt Elspeth, who was always telling me in indirect ways that I was weird.
Nope, it wouldn't matter,
he said.
Arden,
called a woman's voice.
Who are you talking to? Adrina,
he called back.
You know, Mom, the youngest of those two girls who live in that big fancy house beyond the woods. She's awfully pretty, Mom, but shy. Never met such a shy girl before. She stays behind the bushes, ready to run if I come too close. She sure isn't like her sister, I can tell you that. Would you say that's the proper way to meet a boy?
From inside the cottage, his mother laughed gaily.
It may be exactly the right way to interest a boy like my son, who likes to solve mysteries.
I stretched my neck to see a beautiful dark-haired woman sitting at an open cottage window, showing from her waist up. She seemed to me as lovely as a movie star, with all that long, blue-black, curling hair tumbling down onto her shoulders. Her eyes were dark, her complexion as fair and flawless as porcelain.
Adrina, you're welcome here whenever you care to visit, she called in a friendly, warm fashion. My son is a fine and honorable boy who would never do a thing to harm you.
I felt breathless with happiness. I'd never had a friend before. I had disobeyed like the first Adrina and dared the woods, only to find friends. Maybe I wasn't as cursed as she'd been. The woods weren't going to destroy me as they had her. I started to speak, to step forward and show all of myself and brave meeting strangers on their own ground. Just as I was about to reveal myself, out of the depths of the woods behind me came the sound of my name being called repeatedly, commandingly. The voice was distant and faint, but each time it sounded, it was closer. It was Papa. How did he know where to find me? What was he doing home from his office so early? Had Vera called him to tell him I wasn't in the house or yard? He'd punish me. I knew he would. Even if this wasn't the forbidden, worst part of the woods, he didn't want me out of sight from those who watched over me from morning until night. Goodbye, Arden, I called hastily, peeking from around the tree and waving. I waved again to his mother in the window. Goodbye, Mrs. Lowe. I'm happy to have met you both, and thank you for wanting me to be your friend. I need friends, so I'll be back soon, I promise. Arden smiled broadly.
See you soon, I hope.
I ran back toward Papa's voice, hoping he wouldn't guess where I'd been. I nearly collided with him as he came striding along the faint path.
Where have you been?
He demanded, seizing hold of my arm and swinging me halfway around him.
What are you running from?
I stared up into his face. As always, he looked wonderfully handsome, clean, wearing a new three-piece stockbroker suit tailored to perfection. Even as he let go of my arm, he brushed away dried leaves that clung to his sleeve. He checked his trousers to see if the briars had snagged them, and if they had, he might have treated me worse. As it was, his quick inspection found his new suit undamaged, so he could smile at me enough to take some of the fear from my heart.
I've been calling you for 10 minutes. Adrina, haven't I told you repeatedly to stay out of the woods?
But, Papa, it's such a beautiful day, and I wanted to see where the rabbits run to hide. I wanted to pick wild strawberries and blueberries and find forget-me-nots. I wanted lilies of the valley to put in my bedroom to make it smell pretty.
You didn't follow this path all the way to the end, did you?
There was something peculiar in his dark, dark eyes, something that warned me not to tell him about meeting Arden Lowe and his mother. No, Papa. I remembered what I promised and stopped following the rabbit. Papa, rabbits run so very fast.
Good,
he said, snatching my hand again and spinning me around so I could do nothing but be dragged along as I tried to keep up with the stride of his exceptionally long legs.
I hope you never lie to me, Adrina. Liars come to no good end.
Nervously, I swallowed. Why are you home so early, Papa? He looked backward to scowl.
I had a feeling about you this morning at breakfast. You looked so secretive. I sat in my office and wondered if you might not just get the notion to visit the new people who moved into that cottage. Now hear this, girl. You are never to go over there. Understand? We need the rent money, but they are not our social equals. So leave them alone.
It was terrible to have a father who could read your mind. I had to try again to make him see how much I needed friends. But, Papa, I thought you said Mama could invite the new neighbor lady to Tuesday teas.
No, not after what I found out about them. There are a lot of old sayings in this world, and most of them should be heeded. Birds of a feather flock together, and I don't want my bird flocking with those beneath her. Common people will steal your specialness and make you just a member of the herd. I want you to be a leader, one who stands out from the crowd. People are sheep, Adrina. Stupid sheep, ready to follow the one who has the strength to be different. And you don't have to worry about having friends when our family is going to increase soon. Think of how much fun it will be to have a little brother or sister. Make that baby your best friend.
Like Mama and her sister are friends? He threw me a hard look.
Adrina, your mother and her sister are to be pitied. They live in the same house, share the same meals, but refuse to accept the best each could give the other. If only they'd break through that wall of resentment. But they never will. Each has her pride. Pride is a wonderful thing, though it can grow out of proportion. What you see each day is love turned inside out and turned into rivalry.
I didn't understand. Adults were still like the prism lights, changing colors constantly, confusing my thoughts.
Sweetheart, promise you won't go into the woods again.
I promised. He squeezed too hard on my fingers not to promise. He seemed satisfied and eased his pressure.
Now here's what I want you to do. Your mother needs you now that she's not feeling well with this pregnancy. It goes that way sometimes. Try to help her as much as you can, and promise never to disappear and not let me know where you are.
But he wasn't going to let me go anywhere. Not ever. Did he think I might run away? Oh, Papa, I cried, throwing my arms about him again. I'll never leave you. I'll stay and take care of you when you grow old. I'll always love you, no matter what. He shook his head, looking sad.
You say that now, but you won't remember when you meet some young man you think you love. You'll forget me and think only of him. That's the way life is. The old have to make way for the young.
No, Papa. You can stay with me even if I do marry. And I don't think I will.
I hope not. Husbands have a way of not wanting parents around. Nobody wants old people around to clutter up their lives and create more expenses. That's why I have to make more and more money to save for my old age and your mother's.
Staring up at him, I felt old age would never touch him. He was too strong, too vigorous for age to gray his hair and put wrinkles on his face and sag his jowls. Are old ladies unwanted, too? I asked.
Not your mother's kind,
he said with a bitter smile.
Somebody would always want your mother, and if no man wants her, she'd turn to you. So be there when or if she needs you. Be there when I need you, too.
I shivered,
not enjoying this kind of serious grown-up talk when I had just met the first boy I could like. We neared the edge of the woods now, where the trees began to spread out, and the lawn began. Papa was still talking.
"Sweet, there's an old lady at the house whom you've never met. Your mother and I both want a boy so much that we feel we can't wait until the birth to find out what sex we're going to have. And I've been told this lady, Mrs. Alice Moore, has a talent for predicting the sex of an unborn child."
As we neared the house, I paused to stare up at our grand old house that I saw as a stale and time-worn wedding cake. The cupola was where the bride and groom should have been but weren't. I saw the tall, narrow windows as sinister, slotted eyes looking out. When I was inside, I saw the windows as looking inward, keeping an eye on everyone, especially me. Papa tugged me on. A strange little black car was parked on the long curving drive that needed repaving. Weeds shot up in all the many cracks that I was careful to step over, not wanting to break my mother's back. I tried to pull my hand free from Papa so I wouldn't have to be there and watch something that might be scary, but Papa pulled me through the front door, giving me no opportunity to run to my hideaway in the cupola. Once the doors were closed behind us, I was released. Adroitly, I avoided putting my feet on any rainbow design the sun made through the stained glass windows in the doors. In the best of the front salons, my mother, Aunt Elsbeth, Vera, and an old, old woman were gathered together. Mama was lying on the purple velvet chaise. The old woman leaned above her. The moment she saw us come in, she took the wedding band from my mother's finger and tied it to a piece of string. Vera leaned closer, looking very interested. Slowly, slowly, that old woman began to swing the ring tied to a string over my mother's middle.
"If the ring swings vertically, it will be a boy," muttered the old woman. "If it swings in a circle, it will be a girl."
At first, the ring moved erratically, terribly undecided. Then it paused and changed course, and Papa began to smile. Soon, his smile vanished as the ring tried to make a circle. Papa leaned forward and began to breathe heavily. Aunt Elsbeth sat very tall and straight. Her dark eyes held the same intense expectancy as Papa's eyes. Vera drifted closer, her ebony eyes wide. Mama lifted her head and craned her neck to see what was going on and why nothing was being decided. I swallowed over the lump that closed my throat.
"What's wrong?"
Mama asked in a worried way.
"You have to stay calm,"
croaked Mrs. Alice Moore, her witch-like face screwed into a tiny wrinkled prune, her minuscule mouth pursed into a crudely stitched buttonhole. Hours seemed to pass instead of seconds as that ring on the string kept changing directions, settling nothing.
"Has your doctor mentioned twins?"
asked the old crone with a perplexed frown.
"No,"
whispered Mama, appearing even more alarmed. "He said the last time I went that he heard only one heartbeat." Papa reached to take her hand in his, then raised it to his cheek, rubbing it against his faint stubble. I could hear the slight raspy sound. Then he leaned to kiss Mama's cheek.
"Lucky, don't look so concerned. This is all tomfoolery anyway. God will send us the right child. We don't have to worry."
Yet Mama insisted that Mrs. Alice Moore try for a while longer. 5 excruciating minutes passed before the old woman grimly untied the string from the ring and handed Mama her wedding band.
"Ma'am, I hate to say this, but what you're carrying is not male or female."
Mama let out a small, terrified cry. Never before had I seen Papa fly into such a rage.
"Get out of here,"
he yelled.
"Look at my wife. You've scared her half to death."
He shoved the old woman toward the door, and to my utter amazement, he shoved a $20 bill into her hand. Why was he paying her so much money?
"It's $50, sir."
"It's 20 or nothing for a report like that,"
barked Papa, shoving her outside and locking the door behind her. When I entered the salon again, Vera had moved into the shadows to stare at Papa with hard eyes. She had a huge chunk of chocolate cake in her hands, left for me to eat for dinner dessert, and she'd eaten twice as much last night. Catching my glare, she grinned and licked chocolate from her fingers.
All gone now, sweet Adrena. None left for you because you had to steal away. Where did you go, sweet Adrena?
Shut up,
ordered Papa, falling on his knees beside the couch where Mama lay crying.